from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out how the Vonnegut Library is celebrating Banned Books Week.
I'll get a preview of the Governor's Arts Awards ceremony and performance.
And I'll talk with harp guitarist Brad Hoyt. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. As amazing as it sounds, books are still being banned from libraries, schools, and communities on a regular basis. At this year's celebration of National Banned Books Week, which is September 22nd through the 28th, local artists will reimagine the covers of banned or threatened literature and display their artwork at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, while longtime library supporter Hugh Vandeveer lives 24/7 in its plate glass window in a prison of banned books. Travis DiNicola found out more from Vandeveer and from Corey Michael Dalton.
Hugh, Corey, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys here.
Great
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks for having us, Travis.
So, locked up with Vonnegut. Hugh, did you draw the short straw for this?
I sure did, I guess.
Sucker.
So, what is this? Give me an overview of what... I know that it's part of course, the Vonnegut Library's way of bringing attention to Banned Book Week. And there's a lot of other events, in fact, going on as well, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But... locked up with Vonnegut? You're going to be in the window of the library?
I'm going to be living in the window of the library, not to exit the premises for the entire week.
Mm-hmm. He can't have bathroom breaks, and there is a shower in the basement, so he will not stink.
That was the first thing when Julie Whitehead, the executive director of the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, asked me, and I think it was January, mm-hmm. That's the first question I asked was, do you have a shower?
So other than showering and bathroom, pretty much you're going to be... eating, reading, sleeping, hanging out in the, checking your email.
Yes, and I'll actually be doing my work from my day job at Angie's List, and I will be, one of my tasks
is... That's nice. It
was very cool. They were very supportive, when I asked, kind of sheepishly asked, hey, is this going to be a good idea? And everybody at Angie's List was like, this is a great idea.
Cool.
So that was really, really great to be able to do that. But I've also been tasked with, having to come up with a short story at the end of my incarceration.
And you are a writer as well.
So this
gives you some time, though. On display as you're writing.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's a little bit of the fishbowl going on now. We'll see how that goes. Corey actually took the leap into the great unknown last year, and mm-hmm. was the inaugural space cadet in the library.
So I'm really curious about. How this works. So Corey, when you did it last year, mm-hmm. And I would imagine at night especially, it must be a little odd.
Yeah, you get a good view. You see downtown right there. I was sleeping on a cot that collapsed the first night, so I mm-hmm. propped it up on a stand of books, which I thought was appropriate. It was not very comfortable, but yeah, I had some, homeless people wandering by and saying hi late at night, and the Bourbon Street Distillery is right across the street, so
sure.
that was rocking on Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but you just kind of get used to it, honestly. I didn't put the blinds down once.
Do you have a light on you at night?
I had a light. I just laid there and read banned books. It was mm-hmm. great. We had a lot of programming. Like every evening we had readers come and read me banned books. Mm-hmm. Like Michael Moore Skyped in and read to me, which was kind of cool. I was excited about that. And we had former First Lady Judy O'Bannon came and did a big presentation. And so, yeah, we had cool people every night. So, but once everybody cleared out at about 8 or 9, it was like quiet time for Corey, and I just laid around and read until night. And we also had a 24-hour webcam, which is going to be on Hugh, I think.
Oh boy.
Too. Yeah. So you'll be able to check out and make sure he's staying honest.
So what advice, Corey, have you given Hugh?
You know, I don't really have any advice. Hugh is probably going to be better for this than I am. I'm a little bit of an introvert, so like I was happy once the day's events were over and I had my quiet time. But I think Hugh's an extrovert, so he's probably going to be doing jumping jacks and putting on little shows for everybody.
Yeah,
so.
Introverted extrovert, yes. I kind of feel part of this, especially when I've talked to some of my artist friends. It's like, oh, you got a nice performance piece. Like, you know, all the gang at No Exit was like going, that's amazing. It's like, what are you going to do for it? Are you going to do like, you know, have like people tweet you and you get to like do commands? And it's like, oh boy.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. I made up signs that said things like, you know, don't feed the writer and ridiculous things like that. And I would switch those out just to keep people interested.
Yeah.
And I got to know the people that rode the bus. They would ride by every day wave.
Yeah,
and this lady that works at Qdoba I've become friends with now because she would like come by and wave every day. Yeah, it was fun to be integrated into downtown.
Yes.
This is pretty cool. So what about like the food situation? Do you get food brought in?
And one of the things that I've got a food budget, but one of the things that I'm trying to work out right now and getting all the T's crossed on it is to work with some local, especially local eateries to have them bring me food. And I also know too many people who brew craft beer, so that might help as well.
Oh, excellent. So
God knows what's going to happen, Hugh.
Well, I mean, you know, it'll be a nice, so check your
tweets. Hugh could get banned.
I know. Check your tweets. You know, just make sure that's, you know.
Can people stop in and have a beer with you?
Absolutely they can, yes.
All right, I'm taking that.
Now, what about the Hugh's bedtime stories?
So what that is Corey mentioned a little bit of it. I don't.
Are you going to be wearing PJs?
Bedtimes, no. I'm not going to have a kerchief or a cap. So we're lining up to have luminaries read from banned books. One of the people doing it is the First Lady,
Karen Pence,
the state of Indiana, is going to read. We've also got, I think, James Alexander Tom is going to read. We've got a few that we're lining up. So
nice.
They get to choose from a banned book to read. It was really nice last year, like I said, Corey said that when Judy O'Bannon read, she read from
To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of those books that you hear, what, To Kill a Mockingbird is a banned book? But there's so many books, I mean, classic 20th century American books that, you know, we just all sort of assume that, you know, it's part of everyone's canon that are actually still getting banned to this day.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases for strange and offbeat reasons. I mean, one of the things that it astounded me to see how many sort of children's books that we consider standard, like Where the Wild Things Are, Charlotte's Web.
Mm-hmm. The Night Kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that really brings up the issue. One of the reasons why this started, last year was that Slaughterhouse-Five got banned in a school district in Republic, Missouri last year. And it just sort of, you know, kind of fell into the lap of the library and it really, this is the...
And one thing that was really cool, remember that the library at that point then made copies of the book available to anyone there who wanted it.
They did, absolutely. And I think the tally was somewhere in the 80s.
That was great.
Yeah. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Slaughterhouse-Five actually being burned in a school district in, I think, North Dakota. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Well, so, and certainly so Vonnegut, amongst other authors, is one who, and he had a history of being banned for some of his work.
Yeah, one of the things that you can pick up is the Vonnegut Library has commissioned a bookmark that you can get, and the bookmark has all of the words that people found offensive from Slaughterhouse-Five the bookmark.
Some of those are pretty funny.
Yeah.
What's one you can share on the radio?
Oh, boy.
There was something like he removed her stockings.
Yes.
Shocking. Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah. And so...
yeah, I can't say any of these. Pull it up right now.
Well. No. Well, we'll just go with it. Yeah, okay. I'll take your word for it.
Old fart. You can say
okay,
that.
I can say that.
There you go.
So there's a lot of other events that are going on during the week, too. Tell me about those.
Yeah, one of the new things that we're doing this year is I have a nice background in local visual arts and managing things like that, so I couldn't resist. So what I did was I invited a group of local artists took a page and I got permission. I made sure that, you know, it's similar enough that I wanted to ask the folks, good folks at the International Film Festival who do the bigger picture show. Mm-hmm. They have graphic artists redo posters, and I said, well, that'd be a great idea for
movies,
us to do.
Sure.
For, yeah, mm-hmm. So we're going to do, we're going to call it Band Books Recovered.
Okay.
And we're going to have artists are producing works that are that can double as book jackets or
so
book covers.
New covers for Band Books.
Band with written books. And so we've got the likes of Justin Cooper, Mab Graves, Mike Graves, Kyle Harrington, Mammoth Judd, Seth Kong, Flounder Lee, Arik Harris, Sarah Lunsford, Kip Norman, Emma Overman.
That'd be really cool.
Matt Summers, Holly Streakstra, and Pam Wishbow. Yeah, yeah, that's the list.
Excellent, excellent, very good.
And the stuff I've gotten preview on the stuff that's coming in.
And that'll be on display in the Vonnegut Library.
That'll be on display. Mm-hmm. Those will be for sale. Mm-hmm. It's a 50-50 split. The artist gets half. The Vonnegut Library gets half. They get to pick their price. So yeah, and we're really excited about that. So some of the stuff has been, you know, you never know what you get when you task artists with doing stuff like that. So it's going to be a neat show.
Any other events that you want to mention that are tied in with that week?
Yeah. Yes. Also. On that Wednesday, we're bringing in author Chris Finan, who is doing a lecture on Corrupting Our Kids, the Attack on YA Literature. And that will be at the main public library. Yeah.
Good, yeah, because this is being done in partner with a lot of other organizations.
Yes, so, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I sort of, when I talked to Julie about programming for this year, is like, it's good to do that. Try to bring that into a lot of different media, you know, because I think all creative media has been banned or threatened at some point. And the other thing we're doing too is we're showing three films. We're doing Slaughterhouse-Five. We're doing Good Night and Good Luck.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also doing we're realizing a dream of mine, if I can put this together. But
yeah.
We're hopefully having on Friday night a beatnik night. Where I've always wanted to get like a beatnik band together with stand-up bass, brushes on skins, muted trumpet, and bongos. If I can get that together, we're also going to be doing readings from the poem Howl and showing the movie Howl with James Franco.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Good. Well, it sounds like a lot of good stuff planned.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, the whole point of it bringing attention to the fact that there are books being banned throughout our country all the time, still continue to be so.
And actually, in the title, Locked Up with Vonnegut, is because in Republic, Missouri, they now have Slaughterhouse-Five in the library, but they've kept it locked up, and you have to come in and request it. So,
That's
so Hugh's being locked up just like Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah.
So, I think you should just stay there until they agree to let it out of lock.
Oh, boy, no.
Corey, are you just, like, delighted that you don't have to be the one leaving in the window for the week?
You know, I really had a good time with it last year. But yes, I'm glad to not do it again. And I'm pretty involved with the Vonnegut Library. Mm-hmm. I've been involved since they started. And I have to say, after living in there for a week, I had to take a few month break. Like, I need some downtime. So, yeah, I think Hugh's a great choice, and he's going to do a good job with it.
Excellent. Guys, thanks so much for coming in Art of the Matter. Hugh, best of luck to you. I'll be checking in.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Hugh Vandeveer and Corey Michael Dalton from the Vonnegut Library. You can get more information about their Banned Book Week celebration at VonnegutLibrary.org. VonnegutLibrary.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
2013 marks 40 years since the inception of the Indiana Governor's Arts Awards. Originally conceived in 1973, the Biennial Awards Program honors individuals, organizations, partnerships, businesses, and communities that have made significant contributions in the arts in and beyond the confines of Indiana. Sharon Gamble invited Indiana Arts Commission Executive Director Louis Rickey to tell us more.
So I can't believe that this year marks the 40th anniversary of the 40th year of the Governor's Arts Awards. I guess that's how I should say it, right? So explain why I'm making that differentiation.
Well, it happens every other year, so it's actually the 20th award, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been around for 40 years. The Indiana Arts Commission has been around for about 45, 47 years, something around there.
I'm seeing a big 50th anniversary shindig.
Yeah, well,
three years.
this coming year is the 50th anniversary of the National Endowment for the Arts, and of course that was The genesis of all the arts commissions in the country was the establishment of the NEA.
Now, most of our listeners are arts friendly, so they probably know this, but this is a good opportunity to remind people, what does an arts commission do? What does the Indiana Arts Commission do? Because they're not all exactly alike.
Right. Well, we are the state agency for the arts, so we're under the office of the governor, but we have a board of 15 commissioners who are actually legally responsible for the commission. They are appointed by the governor, this governor or a previous governor, because they can serve up to 8 years. And we're here to support the arts in the state and to connect our citizenry with the arts in our state and to champion the arts, to plan for the arts, and to make sure that Indiana has a lively art scene.
And people often think about the money, the grants.
They
but
sure do.
It's so... Oh, you agree with that very quickly. but that's not your only job, your only role. And as you've just articulated, there's a lot of work that the general public probably doesn't see in the realm of advocacy.
Well, there are three basic areas that we work in. Advocacy and research. So we help research get done that helps to craft advocacy or access research. Then there's that whole kind of capacity building and education where we're trying to raise the level of expertise in the state, the capacity to be successful in the arts. And then there's the grant making and the what we call designations, because not everything has a grant attached to it, like the Governor's Arts Award.
Sure.
Is a designation, but not a grant. So those three areas, you know, we work together, and we have services that target individuals, that target organizations, and that also target communities in each of those three realms.
How do you use volunteers in your organization?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to say that the commissioners are all volunteers. They are unpaid commissioners.
Sure.
So at the heart of it are volunteers. But then all of the panels, for instance, that we use, panel, our grants, are all volunteers, citizens with expertise in those areas that we engage to do that work. Of course, we support organizations that are all volunteer-oriented or driven. Most of the organizations we work with are not-for-profit organizations. So the extent to which volunteerism is at the heart of what we do is really, really extensive as an arts commission.
And those panel grant review process is really remarkable and rigorous and challenging and terrific. I've reviewed grants for the Arts Commission before, and it's kind of scary because you get these giant binders full of materials to read through.
we're more electronic now, so you get a giant files full of material now. But
much greener.
well, that's true. It's a really rigorous process. Obviously, we're giving out your hard-earned tax dollars.
Sure.
And mine. And so, you know, accountability is at the heart of the money that we give out, as well as public access and education are also at the heart of the criteria by which we give out funds, and the accountability back to the public to make sure that everyone has access to the arts in Indiana and that there's educational value associated with it. And it's all high quality and accountable for what it does. So those are the things that are attached to our processes.
There's so much discipline, and I know because it's a self-selecting audience, our listeners know better. But sometimes people think, anybody in the arts is just loosey-goosey, and there's no discipline, there's no accountability. And that couldn't be... farther from the truth. So the Governor's Arts Awards, one of the functions is certainly to celebrate people who've done a great deal for the arts, and another is maybe to just draw attention more to the arts, right?
Sure. I mean, it is a piece of advocacy at some level.
Sure.
To make sure people understand the quality of what happens here, who maybe has passed through our borders, gone to school here, was born here, et cetera, and was nurtured in part by what happens here in Indiana. And these are not only, you know, artists, but it's also entities that support the arts, whether those are organizations or philanthropists or corporations or communities.
For example, Crystal DeHaan, who is one of the recipients this year.
Yeah, we have six great recipients this year. Crystal DeHaan is one of those. And of course, Crystal has done such exemplary work in supporting the arts, especially here in the Indianapolis area, but not exclusively. So the guest presenter to help the governor present her award is the dean of the Indiana University School of Music, Gwen Richards, because of her philanthropic activity with IU as part of it.
Makes great sense. A music educator and vocalist named Cynthia Hartshorn, who has been working in our school system for more than four decades.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extraordinary thing. Yeah. she is currently teaches at Arsenal Technical High School choral music. And she is, you know, she's a long-term educator in our state. She's a Ball State graduate as well. And you know, that underscores the importance of education for kids in the arts in our state and what not only it does for them as artists, but as people. And I think the award will, and some of the testimonies that are going to be part of the award ceremony from her students will tell not only of the artistic discipline that they've received, but also how they've benefited as people as well.
Part of a well-rounded person.
Absolutely.
The arts are. Hey, speaking of music, going a little different direction musically, John Hyatt is a recipient this year. Let's talk about him for a moment.
Well, of course, John grew up here in Indianapolis, went to Broad Ripple High School, and started his career here in Indiana. But of course, his career has expanded well beyond the Indiana borders. And, you know, John is known as probably the premier songwriter, popular songwriter of our time. You might be able to actually make that claim. I think certainly the people that have recorded his music is a testament to his songwriting ability and his legendary songwriting. So people like Bonnie Raitt and Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Emmylou Harris, the list just goes on and on and on of people who have recorded his songs. But I also don't want to take anything away from John as a performer.
Sure.
Because he is a singer-songwriter, and he's an absolutely wonderful performer as well.
That is sometimes one of the challenges when you both perform your own work, but also write pieces that everybody else is recording. Sometimes people go, oh, I didn't know he wrote that. Well, he wrote that too.
Right.
So an opportunity for some discovery there. Hey, has a mayor been the recipient of the Governor's Arts Award in the past?
Yeah, I think it was the mayor of, if I'm correct, I think it's Hammond, Indiana, was once a award winner. But
doesn't happen very often, though.
No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, it doesn't happen very often that it's given to kind of a political person. But Mayor Mark Cruzan from Bloomington is receiving one of the awards. And of course, Bloomington has a really vibrant art scene, some of which is really due to Mark's leadership down there. So their cultural district, they established a position in economic development in the city for the arts, specifically the development of the public art program in the city and the Arts Commission of the city. All of these things Mark has been behind. And if you've not been down to Bloomington recently and you're an art lover, you should give that a shot, because it's one of the great cities in our state for the arts.
And that's a good, what you just pointed out is so important, because everybody knows there's a phenomenal music school there and a great theater program, but that's on campus, and the city itself isn't necessarily going to be artistic without somebody like the mayor pushing to make that happen and figuring out strategically how to make that happen.
Absolutely, and being able to help articulate for the public there the value of the arts. I mean, I think he's a proponent and an advocate for the arts as well as a mayor, and he's utilized his position to advance it significantly for that community. And People that live down there really benefit from it, as well as all of us who visit get a chance to visit Bloomington.
Speaking of universality, as we just talked about the arts being universal in Bloomington, Sidney Pollack has had an influence on so very many people. Let's talk about that award.
Well, of course, Sidney Pollack, great filmmaker, director, producer, but also an actor. I mean, that's his roots are in acting. He was born in the West Lafayette area, and then he grew up in South Bend. And he actually he attributes his love for acting to his public education in South Bend.
Hooray! Yay!
Right? Of course, he's passed away a number of years ago, but we've given other awards after the fact, and so he and he is obviously, his impact as a filmmaker is just kind of legendary. He you know, if you went through films that he has been director or producer of, you're talking about things like Out of Africa and Tootsie and The Firm and Absence of Malice, and the list goes on and on. They shoot horses, don't they? Of course, and actors just loved working with him as a filmmaker, because he was one of them, and he understood how actors work and what motivates them, and created some of our great culture in America. It's really ingrained.
And we get to be proud and say he's from here.
Absolutely.
Hey, the guest list at the Center for the Performing Arts is going to have an awful lot of people who are driving just about an hour to get here, because Traditional Arts Indiana, which is based in Bloomington, speaking of Bloomington, is also a recipient this year.
Yeah, Traditional Arts Indiana is our state's official organization to champion and to undergird the traditional arts in our state. And traditional arts is really a pretty broad brushstroke, as it were. I mean, it encompasses crafts. It encompasses some aspects of agriculture. It is anything that is an art form that its roots are embedded in our history as a state and the traditions of our state. And so these are things that pass from family to family, from generations to generation. So part of the performance and award ceremony, we have a bluegrass band, and we also have a quilter, because those are both things that are really embedded culturally in the state of Indiana. But, you know, animal husbandry is part of traditional arts. A lot of other things
Who knew?
You might, you know, fishnet knotting, all sorts of.
Makes perfect sense.
All sorts of things. So it's a great part. You know, a lot of times people think of the arts and they think of, you know,
music,
the
dance,
high
theater,
arts or something
classical
like
music.
That.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily think of the arts that are rooted in our history and in our culture. And that's what Traditional Arts Indiana is really about.
Great opportunity for celebration, but also learning at the Governor's Arts Awards this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to pause while you look at the notes that have been handed to you. Did we miss anything?
No, we didn't. And I do want to point out to people that the show at the Palladium is a show. It's going to be both an award ceremony and a performance as well. So, you know, you'll get a chance to hear a bluegrass band from Traditional Arts Indiana, the Not So Bad Bluegrass Band. You're going to get.
I love that name.
Yeah, but they are pretty good, so they're just understated, I suppose. You're going to get
that aw shucks, who's your modesty?
Absolutely. You're going to get to hear one of Cynthia Hartshorn's ensembles from Arsenal Technical High School. And you'll get to hear a little of John Hyatt as well. So there's a bit of performance associated. And one more performer, Michael Feinstein, who's the artistic director of the Palladium, is going to do a little musical tribute to Sidney Pollack, which will be lovely as well. So a lot of some performance and a lot of feeling good about being a Hoosier and being part of the arts tradition of our state.
Sharon Gamble with Indiana Arts Commission Executive Director Louis Rickey. The Governor's Arts Awards ceremony takes place on Thursday, September 26th at 7:30 at the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. You can learn more at thecenterfortheperformingarts.org and look for INGov Arts.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon?
You know what time of the year it is?
Oh, something's changing. I can feel it in the air.
You can. It's the autumn equinox, or,
it is.
Well, almost the autumn equinox. Close enough for jazz, we'll call it.
There
oh,
you go.
You're going to hear about jazz on our calendar we call.
What'll
we
do? Well, speaking of the autumn equinox, there's actually a celebration of it out at the IMA. And they're doing this with No Exit, the theater group. They're doing a performance and a family-friendly romp through the 100 acres. And during this, you can meet up with Little Red Riding Hood and the Three Little Pigs and keep the bad wolf at bay. It sounds like a fun time. It's going to be at 1 and 2:30 on both the 20th and the 21st. I'm sorry, 1, 2:30 and 4 p.m. On both Friday and Saturday at the IMA.
Lots of fun. Hey, if you didn't get enough Irish music during Irish Fest last weekend, this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Indiana History Center, you can hear Celtic harpist and story. Well, he calls himself a harper, not a harpist. Ask him to explain the difference. Storyteller Patrick Ball is going to be performing and telling Irish and otherwise Celtic tales through the auspices of Storytelling Arts of Indiana. So again, that's this Saturday night at 7:30, Indiana History Center. If you've never heard Patrick Ball live, do yourself a favor and go.
So a new group called the Music Council is making its debut with the Green Room series, and it's an event to focus on conversations between local and national musicians. And so it's a lot of different local music industry veterans who are teaming up to do this. And so from 6 to 8 p.m. on October 3rd, the Music Council will present its first in a series of events titled The Green Room at the Joyful Noise Performance Space. That's also a recording studio down at the Murphy Building in Fountain Square. And this event on October 3rd is going to feature a conversation between Pulitzer Prize winner Caroline Shaw, composer Ryan Lott of Son Lux, and local musician Krista Newborn of KO, sharing all sorts of ideas about the challenges with musicians and labels and the music industry and all that. And it's a pretty cool thing that they are putting together. And, of course, John Buehler from Asthmatic Kitty is a part of this.
He's one of my favorite band names.
And Michael Kaufman and a lot of other people who are involved in arts and culture. But it's first of a series of Green Room events, and we'll be finding out more about that in the future.
Not band names, recording company names.
Yeah,
that's what I meant
to say.
Hey, Jazz Fest, your chances are dwindling. If you haven't been out partaking of Jazz Fest, do so this Friday night or this Saturday night. Aaron Deal Ensemble at Jazz Kitchen. Actually, Jazz, you might want to just sleep in your car this weekend near the intersection of 54th and College, because everything that is ever going to be important about jazz is happening this weekend at the Jazz Kitchen, Saturday from 3:30 p.m. until 12 a.m. You can hear 11 bands on two stages, inside and out, food, drinks, great music. And also at the Jazz Kitchen this weekend from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., jazz master Jamie Ebersold presents his popular Anyone Can Improvise workshop. There's a panel discussion from 1 to 3 this Saturday afternoon, also at the kitchen, moderated by Indiana Avenue archivist David Williams. And it's called Crispus Attucks, Where It All Began. Find out more online, but what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
We've been comparing notes on some Jazz Fest performances.
You know, and just a big thumbs up to the Indy Jazz Fest organizers this year for the 10 days that they've put together of jazz all around the city in different venues. It's been terrific, and congratulations
Absolutely.
To them on that. Hey, this is kind of cool. For next weekend, it is the inaugural Open Streets Indy. It's an open street festival on Sunday, September 29th from noon to 5. It's taking place on Westfield Boulevard between College and 53rd Street, and you're probably wondering, what is an open street? Well,
what is an open street festival, Travis?
Thank you for asking, Sharon. It's basically, they close down a street to vehicles and fill it with people and bikes and dance and music, and they're doing this on a 1.8 mile route that's going to include fitness classes and dances and shock art, games, music, food trucks, kids activity contests, all sorts of stuff. The Riviera Club is going to host a 1 mile fun run. There's going to be tennis games and shuffleboard and pickleball and
what's pickleball?
You'll have to go to find out.
I see.
It's very fun. Anyway, so it's called Open Streets Indy. And it's part of something that it actually started in some Spanish-speaking countries, in specifically in Colombia, and there they call it a ciclovía, and it's just a neat way for people to get together and do some cool stuff. So a lot of different arts organizations, Big Car, Indie Parks, Naptown, Stomp, Lindy Hop Society, Modus Dance, Tango Indie, the Art Center, Art Museum are all going to be a part of this, and it should be a lot of fun. So again, that's next Sunday, the 29th, noon to 5 on Westfield Boulevard between College and 53rd.
Great news. Hey, if jazz isn't your métier, you can go hear the Indiana Wind Symphony, which launches its new season this Saturday night at the Palladium at 7:30 with a performance entitled Hollywood and Broadway Classics. Check that out.
Very cool. Well, that's all the time we got, Sharon, so we'll be back next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do? Post-Equinox Edition.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Harp guitarist Brad Hoyt is from Indy but lives out of town now. He's returning, though, to play a couple concerts, including one at Meridian Music on Friday, September 27th at 6:30, and also at the Muncie Public Library on September 30th to promote his new CD. Travis DiNicola spoke with him by phone and gave a listen to the new CD.
Brad, it's good to be talking with you on Art of the Matter. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome.
So I know you're out in Colorado right now, but you'll be here soon in Indy. And you've got two concerts scheduled, one at Meridian Music and then the other at the Muncie Public Library, right?
That's correct, yes. Friday the 27th, I play at Meridian Music at 6:30, and at 6:30 on Monday, September 30th, I play at the Muncie Public Library, the Kennedy Branch.
Excellent. Now, you've been here before in Indy.
Yeah, actually, I'm from Indiana originally, and I was living in Indianapolis from about 2002 to about a year and a half ago. But I recently relocated to Colorado. But yeah, and I grew up in Muncie, Indiana. I went to Ball State.
Now, do you have any other concerts that you're coming back for? I mean, I know this is all part of your new CD release.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'm going to be playing September 27th and the 30th at Meridian Music and the Public Library in Muncie. But also, I'll be playing in Hamden, Connecticut on October 12th and 13th at the 11th Harp Guitar Gathering. But the actual official release date of the CD is December 2nd.
Oh, okay. So playing, a little preview.
I'm selling my CD exclusively at these shows until the street date, which is December 2nd. So it's a cool way to hear this music before it comes out.
Oh, excellent. That's great. Hey, so help me understand what a harp guitar is.
Okay. Okay, well, the definition of a harp guitar is a guitar with fretted strings with extra open strings that are not fretted that you play, that are meant to be played, actually. So, you know, a standard harp guitar would be like a six-string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But with extra open bass strings below the low E string that you can reach and play whenever you need it. But there's a lot of different kind of configurations for harp guitar. The harp guitar that I have actually was custom built by Stephen Sedgwick, who's a builder in England. It's one of a kind. It's actually a harp guitar version of a 10-string Brazilian folk guitar called a viola capoeira.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually 30 strings altogether with 10 strings on the fretboard that are double-coursed, 10 basses and 10 super treble strings, which are these short strings above the high E string.
Wait, so you've got 30 strings on your guitar?
Yeah.
Wow.
there's 15 courses, so it's, you know, they're all double, like a 12-string guitar in a way. The higher ones are tuned to unison. The lower ones are tuned to octaves.
Now, when you play it, do you play it, I mean, like a standard guitar, or does it sit on your lap, or how does that work?
Yeah, it looks like a guitar, but what looks a little different, though, is that there's like an acoustic arm section kind of protruding from the instrument where the bass strings are attached to. There's like a bass headstock next to the guitar fretboard headstock.
And that gives it that sort of harp look.
Yeah, there's these open strings that that look like a harp, and there's also these short strings that's like a little zither-like harp as well. So there's three banks, you know, a short treble harp section, mm-hmm. a bass harp section, and then the fretted strings in the middle. And so when you play them all together, it creates a pretty unique sound. It's pretty cool.
Well, let's take a listen to one of the tracks off your new CD. This is the first track. Tell me a bit about this, because I know there's sort of a special story behind it.
It's called The Relative Sea, and this track features an amazing harp guitar player from Canada. His name is Antoine Dufour, and he plays a standard harp guitar, which is a six-string guitar with six bass strings, but he plays in a very modern percussive way where he actually hit the body of the guitar to create a drum part, mm-hmm. pretty much, and also covers bass, you know, with all the bass register on that instrument. And it's originally me and him doing a song together. And as this new CD progressed, basically my goal with this CD was to kind of explore the harp guitar's role in an ensemble setting. And so I wanted to add some extra other musicians to cover some melody and some solos.
Sure.
And the two main people I added, which is people I listened to growing up that I really kind of admired, was Howard Levy, who plays harmonica. He was one of the founding members of Bela Fleck and the Flecktones.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And also an amazing pianist, but the best harmonica player in the world, pretty much, in my opinion. And I got him to play on that track, along with Jeff Coffin, who plays soprano saxophone on this track as well. And got these two guys playing on the same track. So being a fan of both of these guys, listening to their music over the years...
That's pretty excellent.
It's kind of a dream of mine to sure. hear them interacting with each other and playing together on the same music. And then you add on top of that Antoine Dufour playing harp guitar. And also an interesting note, and this is a theme throughout the CD as well, is Terry Hayes, he's actually a local guitarist from Indianapolis, played the classical guitar on this track as well, just okay. as a rhythm instrument. So in many of these tracks I'm mixing... You know, on one hand, musicians that are, you know, rightly regarded as like the masters on their instruments, mm-hmm. with musicians that I personally have known and performed with that I think are also great. So it's a great combination. This me personally listening to me and my friends and then my idols on the same track. So
cool. Well, let's take a little bit more of a listen to this, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
And we're back with Brad Hoyt, harp guitarist. Brad, how did you get into playing the harp guitar?
Well, I'm a pianist. Piano is my main instrument, mm-hmm. and I played that since I was as far as I could remember. But one thing I always liked to do with the piano, especially as I started recording, was to kind of reach in and play the piano strings. Kind of has a, kind of a harp-like way to play the
sure.
piano, but not very practical at all, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, to recreate this, I would play like mandolins and, you know, citerns or like 12-string guitars, trying to emulate that kind of sound, but never
sure.
really worked out. But then as I was kind of, I kept thinking about this idea of a portable plux piano, you could say, I discovered with the harp guitar, and the harp guitar really isn't the same as the instrument I have now, but I imagined something that like the inside of a piano where you'd have doubled strings, you know, a wide range of strings to pluck that would be, you know, be played like a guitar and like a harp at the same time, and it kind of made sense for me to, you know, follow that possibility. So
sure.
what I did was I went to the harp guitar gathering, the second harp guitar gathering in Williamsburg, Virginia, way back in 2004, and met some guitar builders, and I found a guy, Stephen Sedgwick, who was interested in helping me build this new instrument idea. And over a 4.5 year period, we created this instrument. And but in 2008 is when I got this instrument. And in 2009, I released a CD called Together Alone, which contains a piano and harp guitar duets.
Mm-hmm.
And I perform my harp guitar, play my harp guitar on one of the tracks, but while I kept going to these harp guitar gatherings, I was introduced to many great harp guitar players and guitarists, and so I decided to collaborate with them. And
cool.
And that CD was pretty successful, and that kind of snowballed into this next CD where I again play with these great harp guitar players, but also combine that with some of my favorite musicians.
Well, let's take a listen to another track on this CD. This is the second track. Tell me a bit about this one.
Okay, yeah, this track's called Sharper's Revenge. It's a gypsy jazz tune, and I found a really cool opportunity to combine two different musicians on the song. Joshua Stefan, he's a German gypsy jazz guitarist, considered to be one of the best in the world at playing gypsy jazz, and my favorite gypsy jazz guitarist plays on this tune. He's amazing. But then I saw the opportunity to have Greg Miner, the producer of my CD, play a harp guitar on this that was actually built by Mario McAfeary. Mario McAfeary is actually a guitar builder from the early 20th century who designed the gypsy jazz guitar that Django Reinhardt played back in the 30s.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
The guitar that Django Reinhardt plays actually his guitar is based on a design by Mario McAfeary. So, and McAfeary, it was also a guitarist, and a little known fact is he also played harp guitar and built a harp guitar for himself to play.
Cool. So it all comes full circle.
And so Greg actually he runs an music instrument museum and has McAfeary's personal harp guitar, so he covers the bass and the accompaniment on that track as well. And then as a final little note, you add Howard Levy to the mix playing harmonica, and you have a pretty amazing tune.
Great. Well, let's take a listen to this, Brad. Thanks so much for joining us on Art of the Matter, and looking forward to your concerts here, both at Meridian Music and also up at the Muncie Public Library at the end of the month. Thanks so much for being on Art of the Matter.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
Travis DiNicola with harp guitarist Brad Hoyt. He'll be performing at Meridian Music on Friday, September 22nd at 6:30, and also at the Muncie Public Library on September 30th to promote his new CD. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll get a preview of this year's fabulous German Fest.
I'm Prosit. I'll find out about the neighborhood of Saturdays.
And I'll find out what the Ballet Conservancy is up to. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What Will We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.